Freak out for a long, long time. We have been issuing a challenge, and the challenge has been accepted. Jay Lethal on the podcast today, and I'm excited. I'm really excited, Chris Walder. I'm so excited that this might not be the last time you hear the Macho Man in this very program.
This feels like the WrestleMania of our podcast. Like, it doesn't get any bigger than this. Jay Lethal, the challenge has been accepted.
Not exactly. But we do talk about Randy Macho Man Savage, and my Macho Man impression does come up in this interview, so...
Perfect.
let's just say, we can say that my Macho Man impression has now been endorsed by someone who would know what a good Macho Man impression is all about.
Attaboy.
There we go. And also we talked to Jay Lethal about a whole bunch of things. One of the things we don't end up talking about, though, is at the time we conducted our interview, we did not know who Jay Lethal was facing at Final Battle, which we are on the road to Final Battle with all these interviews. We now do know, though. It is going to be Jay Lethal defending his television title against recently returned to Ring of Honor Matt Sydal. What a match that will be.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Now that's something I can look forward to.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. Like Matt Sydal, a high flyer, and Jay Lethal, one of the best in the game. As you'll hear in our interview, really loving his role as being a heel and being a bad guy, something that Jay Lethal had been striving to be for a long time. And, you know, he was one of the best baby faces in wrestling, in any promotion. I mean, the people love Jay Lethal in Ring of Honor for his second time around there. And when he flipped that switch and turned heel, I thought it was a tremendous thing. And we talk about a whole bunch of things. We even talk about all that went down in Canada with his match for All-Star Extravaganza, which, of course, had multiple implications that made that quite the match for him, but he pulled it off like a champ, and great match with Cedric Alexander that we were there for, so it's exciting to talk to Jay Lethal, who, you know, really great guy, and, you know, anyone who's a Randy Macho Man Savage fan, we got all the time in the world for them on this show.
Well, I was a huge fan of his work in TNA when he was doing his babyface run. I still remember one of the promos he did with Ric Flair where he was imitating him and he was doing the strut. He dropped the elbow on the stage. I thought that was fantastic. But now seeing him in ROH as a heel, one of the top heels in the company, I mean, good for him to make that transition and make it seem so smooth. It's a testament to the performer that he is.
And, of course, lots of other news to get into. You mentioned the TNAs. They now have a television deal. We'll get into all that after we hear from Jay Lethal. But Jay Lethal on the program talking about a whole bunch of things, from Randy Savage to his two different stints in ROH and a whole lot more. Chris Walder, we have been waiting for this one for a long time. And it's safe to say, I think we can expect Mr. Lethal back in the future, because I think he had a good time talking with me, so should be fun.
We give the people what they want, James. More Jay Lethal. Let's hear this interview, buddy.
Freak out. There's only one reason I could be talking about Ring of Honor and doing this voice, and that is our guest. He is, once upon a time, the Black Machismo, but you know him better as Jay Lethal these days. He's the television champion of Ring of Honor, and he's our guest right here on the Condo on the Moon. Welcome, Jay.
thanks for that introduction.
Well, you know, I had to pull off my Randy Savage imitation. So does that rank decent?
Yeah, it was pretty good. And I was so surprised at the amount of people who could do the Randy Savage voice. But yeah, I would say yours was pretty good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That comes with high praise, because I think, personally, as someone who does the voice, there's only one person who I would bow to in doing that imitation, and it is you. You have that down cold, and you know, it's always a pleasure to talk to someone who loves and appreciates Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh, thanks, man.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because obviously Randy's been a big part of your career in doing the Black Machismo gimmick, and I assume you were a fan growing up of Randy Savage, right?
Oh, 100%.
So one of the things I'm interested in, it seems a lot of wrestlers, Randy Savage was a guy who turned them on to wrestling, and for obvious reasons, I mean, Macho Man was what he was, but when you become a wrestler, it seems like people develop this greater appreciation for Randy Savage. As a wrestler, when you're learning the craft and you're developing it yourself, what are the things that make Macho Man just even better than just as fans as we look at him, as he was as a in-ring competitor?
Well, the biggest thing is when we want to become a professional wrestler, the greatest homage or the greatest, not legacy, but the greatest way that a fan could pay tribute to a wrestler is by imitating him. And you can only imitate wrestlers who not only do they make a mark in professional wrestling, but they stand out in a way that it's easy to mimic him or mimic a wrestler. So everybody who gets into the wrestling business would love it if years from now a little kid was imitating them. So that's first and foremost. The second part of it is that the Macho Man was so memorable. You could close your eyes and hear his voice. When someone says name a move that the Macho Man Randy Savage does, everyone remembers that top rope elbow drop. And for me, that's one of the biggest things about wrestling that I'm striving for, and I hope to God that someday, years from now, someone will be imitating Jay Lethal, and it would be easy for them. The worst is like, oh, you have to imitate someone or impersonate someone, and it's so hard. You got to like think so hard about what exactly it is that you have to do. And that's something that the older wrestlers were able to do. And when you're memorable, you get to make a mark in someone's head, you know? Like if I said Hacksaw Jim Duggan, you automatically think of him, the screaming ho and the 2x4. Back then, all the wrestlers were memorable. And nowadays, it's hard to do that in the wrestling business, mainly because everything memorable has already been done and taken, so it's hard to come up with your own thing, as you can tell with me mimicking the Macho Man, because it's so hard to do my own thing.
No, but it's great. And one of the things you did a couple years ago, the Night of Hoopla, you put on that match with Delirious, and that was just the most amazing thing I had ever seen, with you and Delirious basically recreating the Randy Savage Warrior WrestleMania 7 match, the retirement match. And I wondered, whose idea was it to put that together? And when you're doing a match like that, how challenging is that? Because basically, once you're about a couple minutes in, everyone kind of gets it. You're basically following the format of a match they've already seen. And how challenging is that? Because you're literally almost following it move for move, spot for spot.
Well, that's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to follow it move for move, spot for spot. And we wanted the fans to realize what was going on. That way, by the end of the match, you know, when we do something really small and subtle that was in the match, the guys who remember that match, I mean, they'll get the most appreciation out of it, because they can remember, oh, they did that too. I don't even remember. I forgot all about it, that they did that in the match too. So that was one of the things we wanted. We wanted them to know and realize early on what exactly it was that we were doing. And the sooner they found out, the more enjoyable in our heads, the more enjoyable the match would become to them, because we were just move for move, doing the exact Savage Warrior match. And to answer your question, whose idea was it? It was mostly Delirious's idea. And I of course, me being a Macho Man fan, I was all 100% behind it. The only thing that I wish we could have done that I thought would have been tremendous, but we couldn't do it legally and because of copyright issues, because we were going to be selling this DVD, but I thought it had been amazing if we found a way to play the commentary from Gorilla Monsoon over the loudspeaker during the match.
Yeah, because that was Monsoon and Heenan for that one, I think. Yeah, that was a good call for that match as well, because Bobby Heenan, who is just, I don't know if people nowadays appreciate the brain for how great he was, but he comes up with some funny lines in that match, especially at the end when Savage and Elizabeth reunite. He's just perplexed by the whole fact that Randy, Randy would actually be not upset at the fact that he lost the match, and he's happy to be in love. I mean, Heenan was just perplexed by that whole event.
Bobby Heenan had so many good one-liners. Oh, you could write a book about him.
Yeah, he was a tremendous talent, and he was so great at it. And in fact, Steve Corino, who does your commentary on Ring of Honor, I had said to him one time, I was chatting on Twitter, and I asked him straight out if like he had Bobby Heenan as one of his influences when he started doing commentary, and he said to me yes. And you can tell, because Corino is like that in a lot of ways too. He has a lot of good one-liners himself.
Oh, yeah.
As for yourself, you have made this change in the last year or so, and you've gone to the bad guy side of things. Was that something that you wanted to do? Because I think you've really embraced this new role for yourself within ROH, and I think you're really shining in it right now.
Yeah, it was 100% something that I wanted to do. In fact, when I first pitched the idea to do it, they instantly turned me down because, I mean, I think I was pretty good at being the good guy, you know. But I've always wanted to be the bad guy, and I never had a real chance to do it. And I've been a good guy for so long, and Truth Martini was so, at the time, I just, when I got back into Ring of Honor, this was my first time being introduced to Truth Martini, and some of the things as a bad guy that he was doing, it just really sang to me, because deep down inside, I wanted to be one of the bad guys, you know. But yeah, it was one of my ideas originally that I asked to do. Like I said, it was turned down initially, but luckily they changed their mind. Because honestly, I tell you, I'm having the time of my life. I can't remember the last time I had so much fun in professional wrestling as much as I'm having now in Ring of Honor as the bad guy with Truth Martini. It's so fun.
Yeah, and I mean, Truth Martini, we're talking about Bobby Heenan. Truth Martini, to me, is a throwback to one of those old-school heel managers, like a Bobby Heenan, like a Jimmy Hart, and he has his own unique thing with the Book of Truth and the House of Truth and all of that, and, you know, obviously, you love working with him. What were your impressions of coming in contact with him at first? Obviously, from what you were saying, you had positive thoughts about it, and I take it when you pitched this, he was part of that pitch that you wanted him as part of it?
Correct. He was part of the pitch because I wanted him exactly to be part of it, because he's just so smart when it comes to wrestling, and not many people realize, but Truth Martini was initially a wrestler for years, and unfortunately one time he ended up breaking his neck, so he can no longer wrestle. But the passion is still there. So he just directed that passion that he had for wrestling to managing. And, man, he's taught me so much in the short period of time that we've been together. I don't even think he realizes how much he's taught me. And, yeah, like I said, when I initially pitched the idea for me to be the bad guy, motivation behind it was watching Truth Martini. And it's a testament to him because literally when I came back to Ring of Honor, this was the first time I met him. This was the first dealings I've ever had with him. And he lit a fire in me to be the bad guy and to want to ask if I could be the bad guy. Because now this guy, if I could just be with Truth Martini, then, I mean, oh, he's so good. When you watch him, he's just so good.
Yeah, he's really, like I said, he's a throwback, and I just love it. And part of this whole metamorphosis is you basically ended up working almost, like, what, a year and a half or so with Matt Taven, where you guys, at one point, basically flip-flop roles. And just your thoughts on working with Matt Taven on both sides of the fence, because you guys had that flip, although Matt's kind of gone back to his evil ways, but you have stuck with the evil side, which I think is a good fit for you.
Anytime that I enter into some kind of feud with another wrestler, which means I'm going to be having to wrestle that person over and over again during this course of telling this long story, I love those moments. I love them. Even if it's a wrestler who I particularly don't mesh well with in the ring, by the end of it, we just flow so smoothly. I'm not talking particularly about Matt Taven, but I mean, when I wrestled Matt Taven and all the other times, I loved our matches together. I felt we brought out some of the best in each other, and then we switch roles. When we switch roles, I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying being the bad guy. But yeah, anytime I get to have match after match after match after match with one particular wrestler, it becomes magic. After the first time, it gets easier. It's like riding your bike for the first time. Okay, you're a little shaky, maybe, for some people. But the fourth, fifth, sixth time, each time you get on that bike, you're better and better at riding it, you know?
Yeah, and I think how that ended up ending, it ended at Field of Honor. And I thought the cage match that you guys had with at that event was just off the wall, and Silesia being part of that too. I thought it's unfortunate with her situation that she's no longer part of what you're doing with Truth, but I thought all those things were clicking in that match.
Yeah, and we were just starting to come into our own. Silesia was a great asset to the group. I thought she was different, I miss her because she's not in the group anymore, unfortunately. She's no longer in Ring of Honor, but I thought the combination of me, Truth Martini, and Silesia was amazing.
Yeah, we had her on this program, and one thing that I had asked her about, and she confirmed for me, she said that you always made sure that she had a role to play in everything. And I thought, well, yeah, obviously, Jay Lethal is a Randy Savage fan. He would get how to interact and put a female as part of a match and make her involved and be part of it. Because Savage had, like, two opposite ends of the spectrum in female managers. Had Elizabeth, who was demure and didn't get involved, and then had Sensational Sherry, who would more fit what Silesia would be doing with you. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, it made sense to me. But yeah, I feel bad for Silesia as well, because I thought that was a really good spot for her.
I thought so too, but unfortunately things happen, you know? Man, But Truth Martini and I, we're still going strong. Loving being in the House of Truth. It's losing what I thought was a very strong piece of our puzzle in Silesia. It didn't weaken our group at all, which I'm very happy about. But like I said, Truth and I, we both miss Silesia.
Yeah, and the way that all went down, that was quite the event that happened up in Toronto. I was there live, and your match for that card at All-Star Extravaganza got turned totally upside down. For you as a wrestler, how was it dealing with all of that and coming together and still putting on what ended up being a heck of a match with Cedric Alexander?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I every time I walk through the curtain, I'm literally trying as hard as I can to make sure that anybody watching walks away saying at least, I enjoyed the House of Truth match or the match that Jay Lethal was in. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's hard to answer that question. I love entertaining the massive amounts of people every time I go through the curtain. So I mean, all the outside stuff which we had with Silesia. I mean, everything had its purpose. We ultimately told this awesome story. And, I just love entertaining every time I go through the curtain. Now, that's a hard question to answer.
I just think you deserve a tremendous amount of credit, for being able to adapt and pull things off on the fly like you did, because obviously a lot changed with that match, just within the time frame of getting to Toronto in that weekend. And I thought, if you didn't know any better, you would have thought that was the plan all along, and that's the best compliment you can pay to anybody.
Thank you. Yeah, because ACH, he missed his flight, which unfortunately happens, and it won't be the last time, I'm sure. Unfortunately, we as wrestlers, once in a while, we're going to miss a flight or two, be it weather or the airline's fault or our fault. Once in a while, we're going to miss a couple flights. It's just you got to make sure that the flights you do miss aren't as important for him as it was for that particular event.
Yeah, and because you guys had one heck of a match that was on Ring of Honor television, 30-minute time limit draw between you and ACH, and he's such a special performer in the ring. Like, he's high-flying and all over the place, and he must be both a challenge to work with, but a lot of fun to work with at the same time, I would imagine.
I wouldn't call it a challenge. Every wrestler goes out there with the intent to entertain the fans, you know. And he's right along there with me. We just both want to go out there and please as many people as we can. He was very easy to work with. He's very athletic, which made it much easier. It's always easier when the person's athletic to me. But no, I mean, it wasn't a struggle working with him at all. I loved it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, because it's what I meant by that. I should clarify that. It's just he brings such a high flying, high paced style that, you know, for anyone, it's got to be a challenge keeping up with him, just in general, because he's flying around there like a ping pong ball at times.
Yeah.
So that said, for you, we do not know who you are going to face at Final Battle as of yet, but do you have any preference, or is there any way things would be leaning if you were the one making the decision for who you want to face on that show?
Well, I mean, everyone gets into the wrestling business to become the champion. So if I didn't throw Jay Briscoe's name into the hat, I feel I'd be doing my my inner younger self a disservice, because everyone wants to be the world champion. So if I had a choice, I guess I would pick Jay Briscoe.
He's tied up with Adam Cole at the moment, though, and you have your television title, so that would be the thing there. But that's one thing, you've kind of hinted at this, about going after Jay Briscoe and something like that, and I don't ever recall this happening. Have we ever seen television champion versus world champion in ROH, and would you like to be the first to pull that off if it hasn't happened?
Actually, I was television champion, and I wrestled Davey Richards, who was world champion, in Philadelphia. Neither title was on the line, though, so I don't know if that counts, because neither title was on the line. But I'd love to wrestle Jay Briscoe, and with both titles on the line, I think that'd be very interesting.
Yeah, it's something that doesn't happen very often, but it's certainly a match that, I mean, when you put all your cards on the table, it's something that should draw. When you have a solid champion with both belts, which I would consider you and I would consider Jay, or even if Adam Cole's successful with Final Battle, if it was you and Adam Cole, I think that would make a fine match too.
I think so. I think you're right. I think we need alert the powers that be.
Well, you know, we're doing this interview. They've helped set it up, so if they're listening, I think that would make a hell of a match. Anyway, before you get to Final Battle, you're actually wrestling some tag team action on the weekend, tagging up with Jay Diesel, and you get to get your hands on Jay Briscoe, actually, because you're taking on the Briscoes in Baltimore on Saturday, so that can help prove to the powers that be as well, you know.
Very true, although the one with the most things to gain here would be Jay Diesel, who just so happens to be a product of the Ring of Honor dojo in Bristol, PA. He has the most to gain here in this one. He gets to see, or we get to see, if he can actually keep up with some of the top guys in Ring of Honor, which will be a true test to Jay Diesel. I'm sure he'll pass with flying colors.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to get into with you as well, you've had two different runs in Ring of Honor, and I just wondered, what are your thoughts on the differences between the company, between your times there? Because obviously, a lot of things have been going right for ROH, especially this year, 2014, got on pay-per-view for the first time live, and now going back there for Final Battle, and it just seems there's a real positive momentum, especially this year, and I just wondered, what are your thoughts on the ROH that you remember from before compared to the ROH that you're in now?
I actually hate comparing them. The wrestling world at the time when I was in Ring of Honor on my first time was a different wrestling world than what exists today. I mean, that when I was in Ring of Honor the first time, that time in wrestling, the way the wrestling world was going at the time, it really helped put Ring of Honor on the map. And I almost dare say that if Ring of Honor had Sinclair Broadcasting backing it when I was here before, I'm not even sure there would be a TNA wrestling. It was just, it's almost amazing to me to think about what would have happened if before Ring of Honor had the Sinclair Broadcasting behind it. It would have been, it was already a great product. Not to say that our wrestling product that we are dishing out now isn't great. It almost, to me, nowadays, wrestling just isn't like it used to be. I'm sure most wrestlers will agree to that. It was just a... It was oh man, so different. I hate comparing them. I'm not that good with words. It's hard for me to find the proper words to make the comparison. I do miss the people that were in the old Ring of Honor. The people that I had the pleasure of working with, guys like Samoa Joe and Brian Danielson, or Daniel Bryan, guys like CM Punk. I miss getting to work with these guys, guys like Nigel McGuinness, who although is in Ring of Honor now, it's not in a wrestling capacity. In fact, I remember when Nigel McGuinness bruised my sternum with an elbow to the chest, and as wrestlers, you're there. Oh, why would you miss something like that? Because we're just all sick in the head, you know. But yeah, I miss most of the guys from the old Ring of Honor. And when I got back to Ring of Honor, there was a whole slew of people who I didn't know that I was introduced to for the first time. Guys like Michael Elgin and Truth Martini. I had unfortunately never heard or never seen much of these guys, and I was meeting them for the first time. So it's almost like I used to live in this house. I moved away, and then I came back. The people were renting it, so I just walk in and I ask, yeah, you mind if I see my old room just to bring back old memories, you know?
Yeah, it's a company that has stood the test of time, Ring of Honor, and to their credit, I mean, a lot of those guys you've mentioned have produced and become big stars and done great for themselves, and you're starting to see that with some of the talent that's in Ring of Honor now. I mean, there's a lot of guys who have had a lot of success, and it's a company that it just seems to always be on the cusp of finding new talent. Once you know, one guy's gone, there's another guy that steps in the fold, and
Right. And that Ring of Honor, when I was in Ring of Honor before, almost 7+ years ago, 6+ years ago, I mean, Kerry Silkin was running it, who, I mean, I consider him to be a genius, a great businessman. There would be no Ring of Honor if it weren't for him. And he kept it, I mean, he kept it alive and running so well with who he was appointing to be in charge of this and in charge of that, and his input into the company. If it weren't for him, we wouldn't have been around long enough for Sinclair Broadcasting to step in and help and really give this strong backing behind it. And now that Sinclair Broadcasting is running things, and with the wrestling world being in the state that it's in right now, I do believe if it weren't right now for Sinclair Broadcasting, I'm not so sure that there would have been a Ring of Honor. And now we are really, like you said, we've got that momentum. Ring of Honor, that's the perfect way to describe it. With Sinclair Broadcasting backing us, we have got the momentum. I mean, we had our first live pay-per-view on cable TV, you know, I mean, we've got so much momentum and the sky's full. I think we're coming up on some very big things that will be announced very soon.
Ooh, there we go. I'll have to do some digging. But you've had one of the things that has happened within this year for Ring of Honor is the relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I had heard through the grapevine that was something that really excited you personally.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of all wrestling, especially New Japan Wrestling. Nakamura is one of my favorites, and I wish I could have wrestled him, but unfortunately I didn't get to. But yeah, I've only been to Japan once, and that was years ago for a company called Zero One. Steve Carino actually helped me get there. And I was hoping that somehow I would get to wrestle some of my greats, so some of my favorites, I mean. But that still remains to be seen. Not saying I didn't have a great, enjoy my match. I enjoyed my match very much so. I got knocked out in that match as well, which was kind of scary. I'm very much looking forward to this working relationship with New Japan. It's something that the wrestling fans in general should definitely keep their eye on.
Yeah, it's exciting. Like I was at the show in Toronto for the New Japan show, as well as All Star Extravaganza, and it was just a really exciting atmosphere. It felt like something very different that, you know, we just don't get to experience very often in wrestling these days, and it felt like something big and something different, and it really was well received both in Toronto and New York.
Right, 100%.
And then one last thing before I let you go, you're also involved in training wrestlers, and I wondered, what's that experience like for someone who, by and large, most people would say Jay Lethal is one of the better wrestlers out there today and knows his stuff, and I always think of, in pro sports, they make the analogy, sometimes, you know, all-star players and people who are very good at their craft, they find coaching and developing talent to be a hard thing to do because things come so easily to them. For a guy who, it looks like, from all intents and purposes, wrestling comes fairly easy to you, how challenging is that to be training people and being a part of that?
I actually love it. The part that I really love is seeing the progression of someone who didn't know anything about what I was showing them in the beginning, and then months later, them knowing so much. And it's almost, to me, not about the wrestling. For instance, if I was some sort of math genius or like one of the world's greatest carpenters, I would still be teaching what I knew to someone who didn't know it, because I'm in love with helping people learn something that I know that they don't know. There's something about it that I just love. And you gotta have the patience when you're teaching somebody something, because the way that I was shown may work for me, but it may not work for you. So another one of the challenges is everyone learns different. So I may have to change something up to show someone something. And that's a beautiful thing to me, because everyone is different. Not everyone learns with the same method or the same speed or the same technique. So I'm in love with the way that the human brain works, and the way you gotta alter things so that someone understands something. I'm totally in love with it. So, I mean, it just so happens that I'm a wrestler and I feel so passionately about wrestling, which is why I'm teaching it. But I think I'm in love with the actual teaching process, not actually teaching a particular subject. So when I get to show someone something that I know that they don't know, and I get to see them learn it from beginning, months and months pass of them still learning, that's what I'm actually in love with.
It's good. Sounds good. And it's Uproar Pro Wrestling Academy, where you're training people down there in Clearwater, Florida. So if you want to...
That is... I'm currently sitting outside of my school right now.
Well, there you go. So if you want to check them out and head down to Florida, nice weather down there. I know that. And, you know, get trained by one of the best. Jay Lethal is there to help you out. And they got a Facebook page, so look him up on Facebook or hit this man up on Twitter, @TheLethalJay, right?
Yep, that's right.
All righty. Well, Jay Lethal, we don't know who you're facing yet in Final Battle, but we wish you all the success in the world. And one last thing before I let you go. You mentioned now you're the heel and you're loving this, but it is so hard to be a babyface nowadays in modern wrestling. What's the trick to it? Did you have some secret formula that people just haven't tapped into? Because it is so hard to be that guy that everybody likes and gets behind these days.
It's very hard. It's very hard. No, I don't have some secret formula. I don't. I try as best I can to, as hard as it is, to get fans to be able to relate to any situation that I'm in. And I feel like if they can't relate to the situation that I am in when I'm that good guy, then I almost feel like I've lost them. So that's mostly my key. I try and set up a story or set something up in a way to where hopefully I can get most people watching to relate to my situation, and I feel that that's what really helps me. I feel like I'm giving away a lot of inside wrestling secrets, but that's pretty much my mindset when I'm the good guy.
No, but it's tough. It's tough to get, like, this is a world in which there are many shades of gray, and to have that pure shade of white hat baby face, it's hard to pull off these days.
Yeah.
Anyway, as I said, we wish you luck at Final Battle. Give our best to Truth Martini, and we love what he does too. And all the best to you in your run as television champion. And hey, television champion versus world champion. If it can happen, you heard it here first.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
There it was, Jay Lethal, talking about a number of things. His love for Truth Martini, and his love for being a heel and being a bad guy. And love for a friend of the program who's been on with us before, Suezia Sparks, who unfortunately no longer with Truth and Jay Lethal. But as Jay said, they miss her. And, you know, unfortunate situation for her. But for ROH, they keep on chugging. And Final Battle, slowly starting around in shape. We got three matches now, and you know, this is going to be one heck of a card, I think, when all is said and done, because when you look at that list of people signed to appear, still some pretty heavy hitters that we don't know what their plans are for Final Battle yet. But I'm a lot more excited for Final Battle than I am for Survivor Series. Let's put it that way.
Are we going to get on the Survivor Series hate wagon right now, buddy?
No, we'll get there. We got other things to talk about, but we'll get there. But as far as Ring of Honor goes, you know, they've got one more show before they get to Final Battle. That is this Saturday in Baltimore. You will hear last week's guest, Kyle O'Reilly, will be in the main event of that show as they're doing a tag team tournament. The winners all meet up with Red Dragon in the finals, and call me crazy, I think Red Dragon will end up winning.
Yeah, it's a pretty safe bet at this point.
I think so. I have faith in Kyle O'Reilly. I think he can get it done, and Bobby Fish, you know, those guys, pretty good. And they'll be facing the Time Splitters at Final Battle. And, of course, our buddy, our pal, Adam Cole, he said he wanted to be in the main event, and he wanted to be defending the world title. Didn't get that done. But he did get in the title match. So there you go.
There's no rules in that match now, correct?
That is. It is a fight without honor, sir. And Adam Cole and Jay Briscoe, if you remember back to WrestleMania time, they had ladder war. So my wondering about that match is, how on earth are they going to top Ladder War? And I don't have an answer for that just yet, but we'll see. It should be fun. I mean, Jay Briscoe and Adam Cole have faced each other numerous times, and I think it's a matchup where both are very comfortable, and it should be great. I mean, Adam and Jay have developed a great chemistry, and I think this probably wasn't the match that it was supposed to be when they were planning out Final Battle all the way along, but it's the match we have, and I think it's a great one.
It's going to be hard to top Ladder Wars, though, but you know what? Briscoe, Cole, two guys that we both admire, love watching. they're more than capable of delivering a five-star performance, and I can't wait to see the two of them just beat the living hell out of each other. It should be good.
Well, I'm sure I'll mention that to Adam if he's on the show between now and Final Battle.
Hey, you know what, man? We love Cole, but at the same time, I just want to see some awesome wrestling, and this is going to be a street fight. It's just going to be an all-out war. It's worth the price, even though, like you said, it was probably not the path that ROH wanted to take, but here we are, nonetheless.
But it's a path that they've navigated well, and we've got to this point, and I'm happy with it. Like, I think for a pay-per-view audience where they're trying to draw in new fans, they probably haven't seen Ladder War. They probably haven't seen the Jay Briscoe and Adam Cole feud. So it works on some level for them, and I think it'll turn out very well. Hopefully we're going to be talking with Adam Cole in the next couple weeks. I know he's on my list of people that we are knocking off week by week here, so we will see. But Adam Cole, we love him here. Another guy we love, oh, by the way, former ROH talent, now with a debut date in NXT. We used to know him as Kevin Steen. He is now Kevin Owens. Oh my God, that promo. I'm very excited.
I was about to say, you must have watched that a couple dozen times, right?
No, I just watched it like once or twice, but it was like, boy oh boy, Kevin Steen, or Kevin Owens as he will be in NXT, he means business. And that seems very clear, and I thought, great by Kevin following up on a tweet he had, which I retweeted at Condo on the Moon, if people didn't see it. Basically, Kevin said, 14 years of my life in wrestling has all built up to this moment. And I was like, wow. Like, why don't they have stuff like that on Raw? Because if you wanted to sell me, sir, you sold me.
Like, the NXT show needed any more of a reason to tune in. I mean, we already have Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville for the title. We have a pretty awesome undercard, and now it looks like we're going to get the in-ring debut of Kevin Owens.
And conspiracy theory, when did that Kevin Owens thing appear? Right after a bumper for Sami Zayn. I wonder if that meant anything.
Ooh, good point, man.
Yeah, it's all
out
there.
There, of course.
There is.
A little bit.
Yeah, it relates back to ROH, that little match called Ladder War. They've wrestled a time or two, tagged a time or two, you know, and their alter egos are helping out orphans in Mexico as we speak. So that being said, very excited for Kevin. Obviously, a lot of people that we've talked with over the months have had nothing but great things to say about Kevin, his former colleagues in ROH. And, our guest this week had a great feud with Kevin Steen as well for the ROH title back in the day, Jay Lethal. Great feud where Kevin actually ended up, he spat on Jay Lethal's family, which was just crazy. But that's Whoa. Kevin.
Oh, man. I'm actually curious, like, that group of five that WWE seems to love promoting these days, with Neville and Zayn, and then the three newcomers in Balor, Tommy, and now Owens, they're all going to be on that NXT card, and I think that's just a sign of the way that WWE is going to book that brand. I mean, they're letting these guys be themselves, and that's awesome. I mean, in that promo for Kevin Owens, it doesn't look like they tweaked much in his character.
No, it looks like the same. The one thing, though, it does look like Kevin Owens is going to come in as a heel, and a big, bad, nasty heel.
Oh, definitely.
And that's great, because, I mean, I think, you know, as great as Kevin Steen or Kevin Owens as he will be, is as a babyface, I think he's even more tremendous as a heel. And when you look at all those new guys, really, you know, Neville's kind of a tweener. He's leaning towards being a heel now. But all the rest of them are baby faces, so you kind of needed a heel out of that group.
Well, I think Neville's probably going to be called up around the Royal Rumble. I think he is going to drop the title to Zayn on the WWE Network, and if that's the case, somebody needs to kind of vault into that number one contendership. And considering the past between Owens and Zayn, I hope WWE acknowledges that to some extent. I'm not saying show footage of them as a tag team in the past, but at least, you know, I think the smart fan realizes that, of course, Owens and Zayn did wrestle around the world together as a team against each other. Why not use that to your advantage?
Yeah, and I think they have, on the NXT level, they've been willing to talk about people's past histories. They definitely talked about the past history between Sami Zayn and Cesaro, which was out there with Ring of Honor and other places. So I think that'll definitely add to the mix, but that's a few weeks down the road. What we have in front of us is, well, we'll get to Survivor Series at the end, but first and foremost, let's talk about the TNAs for a minute, because they are going to live, Chris Walder.
They have a pulse.
Yes.
God bless them.
Destination USA, which, surprisingly enough, we don't get in Canada. How about that?
Is that what it's called, or is it Destination America?
Destination America, sorry. I said Destination USA.
Typing in the wrong channel on your, on your search here.
Destination USA, that's the Hacksaw Jim Duggan channel. He basically goes, ho.
Ho.
That's what he does for the entire 24 hours the channel is on. No, I just mentioned him because Jay Lethal mentioned Hacksaw, so he was in my brain, so there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, to get somewhat serious about this, obviously all has been talked about this network. It's significantly smaller. There's talk TNA is really going to even strip down more based on this in terms of their talent roster. And on top of everything, probably, arguably, to my mind, their biggest star, Ethan Carter III, he's out for 6 months.
Oh, yeah, not the best way you want to start your new time on a new network without your, arguably, your top guy, anyways.
Well, he's definitely, I would think, when you talk future prospects, TNA, that's your blue chipper right there.
Yeah, but how long of a future does TNA really have at this point, you know?
That's the thing, you just don't know. Like they're hanging on, they're like, people get upset with this analogy, but to me, they're like the cockroach that won't die.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
I mean, it is what it is, and you can take whatever you want from it. But the other thing, this is exciting for us, Chris Walder. Dixie Carter has not forgotten about us. She is working hard on a television deal for us up here in Canada.
Where would they even put it, you think?
That's the thing. When I look at this, I'm like, okay, Americans look at that and go, oh, okay, Dixie Carter's going to get a TV deal in Canada. It's not as easy as everyone thinks it is, and I don't even know if Dixie realizes how challenging it is, because here's the thing. Rogers is in bed with the WWE for the next 12 years. Mm-hmm. We all know this. They are distributing the network. We have talked about the problems and challenges that will be for Rogers, because the other major cable company that owns most of the television stations in this country is Bell, and Bell has no interest in being in the wrestling business, so that leaves Dixie Carter to go where?
Much music.
Maybe. I mean, there is no Destination Canada that I'm aware of, so she can't go there.
Thank God for that.
Why? Destination Canada might be cool. You don't know Chris Walder.
I don't even know what Destination America is.
That's true. Well, apparently it's like all kinds of weird stuff, like people hunting Bigfoot and other charming stuff like that.
So what is it, like the Nature Channel or something there?
It's an offshoot of Discovery, but it's like if you were talking up here, it'd be like the TSN 5 of Discovery.
If even 5.
I don't know. It is what it is. We're Canadians, folks. We don't know what this channel really is. We just hear from what Americans tell us about it. So if we're wrong, Americans have misinformed us of what this channel is. But it's obviously small. From Dave Meltzer, his reporting, he says, ROH, technically speaking, probably will be in more households than TNA when all is said and done with this deal. I don't know if that's correct. I've had other people throw numbers at me, but it's a horse race now. Let's put it that way. Ring of Honor and TNA are neck and neck with the amount of television reach they have, and given the success that ROH is having in terms of building their brand and going into their second live pay-per-view, if that comes out successfully, you know, I think Ring of Honor is ready to claim that position of number two. And TNA, they're still going to be on Spike. They're going to have a couple like best of shows or whatever the hell they're doing, but they're not running any new programming until sometime in January, so this is really a time for ROH to kind of grab the reins and take control of this thing.
Makes you look pretty smart, James, because you've been calling this for the better part of the year, saying that ROH was just on the verge of becoming number two and overtaking TNA, and it looks like if this is true, with ROH being in more households, that could very well happen in the next couple of months.
Yeah, like, in an official sense, I think it really could, and people are going to say about Lucha Underground, and yes, Lucha Underground's great, and I think, you know, it's an interesting product. But the LRA network, it's even smaller than Destination America at this point. Although they do have this sweet deal where they're getting on a Spanish channel as well, so they're getting more distribution that way. Still, that said, I think ROH is of the pack that's out there. ROH looks like your best bet to be the number two company in North America right now. Because we don't know what the hell Jeff Jarrett's doing. Global Force Wrestling, as we talked about last week, I don't know what they are.
It's a fancy name. It's not a wrestling company yet.
It's a promotion company, as far as I know, that has a relationship with New Japan that ROH already has. So I don't know how that's all going to work. But apparently it's working out so far so good with that, because some ROH talent is going to be on that show on January 4th for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and promoted by Global Force Wrestling, along with Jim Ross on commentary and all the rest of that. But we shall see. It's an interesting time for all of these people scrambling to be number two, though. And I think what's definitively clear, there's two things that are definitively clear to me. No one's ever beating WWE, which I think we all knew already.
Of course.
And the second thing is, people desperately want a legitimate alternative to WWE, because, quite frankly, what WWE has done has been pretty brutal lately.
Well, don't you think, like, does it really matter to the casual fan who number two is? Because at this point, isn't it just, I mean, we appreciate the fact that there are other options out there, the fact that we have the Lucha Underground, we have Ring of Honor, even TNA to a lesser extent. I think this is just a really good time for wrestling fans where they can change the channel, or they can have different nights of the week where they can watch something different. It doesn't have to be WWE all the time.
If they can get these channels, and that's the trick for all of these companies, even Ring of Honor, who's doing better, and they're trying to get syndication deals in more markets, and it's a slow process, but they're starting to get that done. But yeah, that's the issue for all these secondary companies, is getting in more homes and getting their product in front of more eyes, and I think that's the key for all of them. But I think what ultimately fans want is they just want a stable, sustainable second company that they can rely on. And you know what? If the WWE isn't going good, or I'm not happy with it, I have this that I can count on that will always be there for me. And TNA has not felt like that company for the last year. Even though they've kind of got a stay of execution with this new network, it still feels like they're heading in the wrong direction. And ROH, quite frankly, their 2014, they've been heading in a right direction in terms of their attendance, in terms of, you know, what they did on their first pay-per-view, what they're hoping and expecting to do with their second pay-per-view. They're the company that seems to have their eggs in a basket. They just signed a toy deal. They're getting all these little things done and bringing in new revenue streams. And, you know, it just looks better. If I'm an investor, not that you can do this, but if there was ROH stock or TNA stock, I'm definitely putting my money with ROH.
It's a shame, too, because I've actually been watching a little bit of TNA in the last couple of weeks, and it hasn't been terrible. You can just tell from a production standpoint that they have been dwindling back and cutting back on the lighting and then the stage and the setup and whatnot. But the actual in-ring work and the storylines they've been putting together, it's been pretty interesting. I was really a fan of Ethan Carter III before he got injured, having Brodus Clay, who's now Tyrus, come in and be his bodyguard, you know, their history down in NXT. That was pretty cool. I love the stable that James Storm is putting together with all of these guys that you wouldn't necessarily associate with him, like the Mannix and Sonata and now Abyss. I think that's cool as well. But again, it's like the minute you get invested into TNA, you're worried because you feel like they're just going to pull out the rug from underneath you and just take away all of their momentum, which they've proven to do a lot before.
Yeah, and it's a company that, you know, and I've heard the same things you're saying, and in all honesty, I look at it in this way. They've had over a decade to solidify themselves as the alternative. They failed.
Yeah.
And that's just it. I mean, if people still want to watch their product, by all means, go ahead and watch it. And if it's good, bad, or indifferent, you know, that's for you to decide. But I feel like I want another alternative. And I just look at ROH in the terms of, the reality is, as much as wrestling fans bitch and whine about the WWE, at the end of the day, we all are gravitated to that bigger platform at some point. We may get frustrated, we may leave, but it's kind of like the steady girlfriend. And, you know, we all eventually come back to the steady girlfriend. And I just don't think that, you know, TNA does anything that interests me in that regard. Whereas I have a good expectation, if I watch Ring of Honor, that the people on my screen, more than likely, I'm going to see a few of them in WWE within the next 3 to 5 years.
It's the breeding ground. It really is at this point. And we it's supposed to be NXT, but it looks like more and more like the ROH guys are working their way up. And who knows, maybe even Adam Cole will find him there someday.
We never know. That's a question to be answered. You know, it's kind of like a minor league system. If you look at NXT, they're kind of like AAA, and ROH is kind of like the AA slot, you know, for baseball fans. There's
right.
An analogy for you. Michael Elgin's a big baseball fan, so he will understand
yeah.
that one. But anyway, that is what's going on with TNA, status quo for them now. Some of the things they're trying to tout about this move to Destination America. I got it right that time, right, Chris Walder?
Yeah, don't forget that.
Yeah, I'll have to remember it. Make a mental note. But one of the big bonuses, are you ready?
Sure.
You get more TNA on Destination America, because now those one-night-only pay-per-views, you know, that no one watches?
Oh, yeah, like the wild card tournaments and stuff?
Yeah, you're going to get to see those on Destination America.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that'll be exciting. That it were taped 6 months ago that people
oh, yeah.
have long since forgotten about. That'll be exciting. I think that's, like, yeah, TNA's problem was definitely they didn't have enough content on Spike. That was really what was holding them back.
Well, you can't have as much content as WWE has these days, but yeah, they needed more than the 2 hours they're getting a week on Spike.
Oh yeah, for sure, because they were filling that 2 hours so well that clearly they had advanced to the point of, you know, we need like 4 hours now.
Well, in 1 hour it's just Dixie Carter standing in the middle of the ring and just taking verbal abuse from the audience, but you need a little bit more than that.
I may have sent a nasty tweet to Dixie, by the way.
Did you now? What did you say?
When she said about getting a deal in Canada,
yeah.
I might have said something along the lines of, on behalf of all Canadians, please don't.
Oh,
and, yeah.
She's not coming on the show.
No, but I don't think we were inviting her anyway. So
yeah, that's true.
That's cool. We agreed to disagree with TNA.
But we leave the door open for everyone, just not Dixie Carter, apparently.
No. I mean, go to ROH or go to WWE or go somewhere else. Lucha
yeah.
Underground, we'll have them too. Basically, there's just one company that we don't seem to enjoy too much, and it's more me than you, I'll be honest.
I'm a little more lenient. I have the Christmas spirit in my heart.
You could still draw Walder in, but you've got to get a network up here in Canada or Walder won't be able to watch you.
For TNA or WWE?
TNA.
Oh, my God.
WWE has a network firmly established here in Canada. Sportsnet 360, I don't know if you're aware of it. Our former guest, Jimmy Corderas, is on there quite a bit. You know, it's a fairly big network up here in Canada, you know.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy K.
There you go. So, before we get to our Survivor Series, I would like to talk a little bit about Monday Night Raw and why it totally pissed me off and proved something that I have said on this program on numerous occasions.
Which is what?
To be John Cena's friend is not good for you. It's not good for you in any way. We've seen what happened to Zack Ryder, not doing all that hot.
Nope.
Your buddies, the Usos, they were once tag team champions, and then they ran into John Cena, and now they are not.
My best friends.
Yeah. Many, many people we could list off, but we won't waste all the time on it. Let's just skip ahead, or skip back, to Monday Night Raw. Team John Cena for Survivor Series. Out comes Dolph Ziggler. He has a match. He loses his Intercontinental title and gets beat up by the Authority. John Cena is where?
Nowhere to be found.
Really? I think he was playing around with Nikki Bella in the back. That is
Can
not confirmed.
Can you blame him?
Well, I'm just saying. I think that's what was going on. But okay. Anyway, no John Cena. The Big Show comes out, and he's followed by Stephanie. I was really thrilled that Stephanie did not make the Big Show cry, because that's what I thought was going to happen, but it did not. The Big Show kept his tears in. Out came Sheamus, who we'll get to a little later, because Sheamus did not fare well at all, apparently.
No, he didn't.
No. Anyway, Sheamus and the Big Show have a match for the alleged number one contendership, which, oh, by the way, doesn't John Cena already hold that number one contendership?
That's what I was saying when it happened. I mean, how many number one contenders are there now?
And where is this world champion that you get these shots against? I mean, Seth Rollins is waiting. John Cena is waiting. And then, supposedly, we're going to get the winner of Big Show Sheamus also in line for that big fatal four-way that they were planning for December, but guess not. Because the Authority came in, they busted this all up, kind of predictable, beat up both the Big Show and Sheamus, and in fact really beat up Sheamus, which we'll get into in a minute. And no John Cena again. He was in the back. I saw him watching on the monitor for a little bit, so at least he cared enough to watch for a little bit. So no John Cena again. And once again, two more of Team Cena get the hell beat out of them, and no John to save them. What a babyface hero he is, isn't he?
Wrestling logic. You have your team members getting decimated one by one, and you can't even be bothered to come out to the ring and at least pretend to care.
Yes, but John was busy. He was trying to recruit Ryback to be on his team, so that's understandable, I guess.
The big guy,
who apparently is a team all unto himself. He is Team Ryback.
Well, I'm sure Curtis Axel takes offense to that.
Well, yeah, but Curtis Axel, come on. I mean, they showed their breakup on what, Main Event? No one saw that. Team Ryback, he is a team unto himself, and after watching the show, I can't blame him. I think that's a wise move by Ryback. He may be the smartest guy on the babyface side in the WWE right now.
Oh, if that's the case, then they are totally screwed. Ryback, the smartest on any team? That's bad news.
I believe he is. I think he is the smartest one. And the other thing, we've got through all that, and then, of course, we kept alluding to Sheamus. Sheamus legitimately got hurt during the show, apparently. Because all of a sudden, from out of nowhere, here comes Luke Harper's buddy. He comes sauntering down, and he's all of a sudden in the Survivor Series match. Eric Rowan, congratulations! You have graduated from stalking Smelly Cat, Grumpy Cat, and Renee Young, to now you're in the main event.
The fastest push in WWE history. He literally went from the bottom of the barrel to the main event of one of the four major pay-per-views in an hour. That's all it took.
And you can tell this was on the fly, because there is no way you're casting him in the Grumpy Cat segments if he was going to be in your main event, right?
Right.
That wouldn't happen. Not even in WWE. I just don't see that. But
Which makes me wonder, because apparently, according to reports, they knew Sheamus was hurt heading into Raw, and then the attack from Mark Henry putting him through the table was designed to take him off of television. But if that was the case, then they would have needed a replacement long before, they unveiled it to be Eric Rowan. Was he the plan all along?
Well, then maybe I'm giving them too much credit. Maybe they were going to put him in with old Smelly Cat. See, I want to keep saying Smelly Cat from, like, Friends.
Yeah, I was about to say, you a big Phoebe fan?
I like the song Smelly Cat. I don't know if I'm a Phoebe fan, but I did like Smelly Cat. It was a great song. But anyway, Grumpy Cat, Smelly Cat, whatever the hell he was. He's friendly with The Miz, so that already makes me not like him. So Eric Rowan is now in your main event. Crazy as it seems. There's a lot of holes in this. There's another thing that'll be a spoiler coming from SmackDown that we'll talk about. But first and foremost, the one thing that I don't understand as well. Triple H has everything to lose in this match. Why is he not in the match?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. He should have been in there over maybe a guy like Rusev, who I still wonder how they're going to get eliminated from this thing. But
Double countout for sure. Has to be.
You think so?
Has to be. He brawls to the back with somebody.
All right. Yeah, because he can't get pinned or submitted. There's no way they're doing that here.
No, because we're getting to it, but the Authority's losing people. This is going to happen unless something really bizarre happens. But, so Rusev V's double count-out.
Mm-hmm.
Double count-out guy. Like Roddy Piper back in the day. Because Roddy Piper would never job to anybody. It was always double count-out.
That's true, yeah. Survivor Series. Wasn't there, one match where an entire team got disqualified and then Ric Flair was the only one left?
I don't know. They've had some bizarre... Like, the way they try and book these things is very funny.
Bone up on your Survivor Series history, James.
I don't know. It's just, it's all a blur. The Hulkamaniacs, the Macho Maniacs, and...
Used to be such a big deal until they turned all the Survivor Series elimination matches into just one big Divas showcase.
Oh, God. Yeah, we'll get into the Divas match later. But there we have it. And now, we speed ahead to SmackDown. And Triple H has decreed when the Authority wins, because obviously they're going to win, John Cena and all his buddies are fired.
Hey, but you know what? Apparently, there are fan reports coming out that Triple H said that everyone on John Cena's team would be fired, with the exception of John Cena.
Well, that's good, because as CM Punk taught us a long time ago, John Cena gets fired. that's going to take for more than a week. We would try to sell that John Cena getting fired angle.
But is this smart on WWE's part? Because not only does this last-minute stipulation seem so unnecessary, but doesn't it give away the fact that Team Cena's probably going to win?
There's an alternate theory out there, and stop me if you've heard this before. They feel, some people out there, that this will set the table for John Cena to turn heel.
How so?
Well, if he turns his back on his own team and sides with Team Authority, obviously they're not going to fire him.
Yeah, but... You think they would actually do a heel turn at the pay-per-view?
That's the theory that people are floating out there. I mean, we've been here a million times over. I'll believe it when I see it with John Cena and a heel turn. But it seems we're getting something like that, or we're getting the most predictable match in WWE history, I think. Because that's the only two ways it can go, right?
I just don't feel like they're going to do anything catastrophic in terms of storylines, just because it is free, and you'd think they'd kind of save some of that stuff for the road to WrestleMania, or at least a network show that people would have to pay for.
Well, there are rumors that there's other rumors going around that there's going to be a Ryback Triple H program at Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
So that would make me think, what if... We'll play this out. Now, granted, I preface this by saying we don't believe this is the case. We don't think this is where they're going. But if it did, obviously the guy that John Cena is going to turn on is Ryback, right?
That would make the most sense, yes.
So, if you want a Mania match for John Cena, the heel, at WrestleMania, who's that match with?
Ryback?
Right. So he has to go through Triple H and go through the Authority, and then he gets Cena at WrestleMania.
God. Oh, my stomach. Oh, Ryback versus Cena. Hey, let me pose this question to you.
Is that not a better match, though, in all honesty, than where they were heading with John, with Rusev and John Cena?
No, I'd rather see Rusev Cena, to be honest. But that's...
Knowing full well that John's winning.
Because at least it's different for WrestleMania. We've seen Ryback Cena before. I don't need to see that again. It was a disaster the first time they did it. I don't need to see it again, even if the tables are turned and Cena's the bad guy. But I will ask you this, because people have posed this question to me on Twitter. Does Ryback get this push that he's getting right now with the Authority, Triple H, Cena, whatever, if Roman Reigns is healthy?
Probably not. Not to the level that they're doing it.
Exactly.
Like, Roman Reigns is coming back, and if he's healthy and ready to go, the Ryback is getting pushed to the back of the bus.
But doesn't that kind of not only defeat the purpose, but when Roman Reigns comes back, they've spent so many months pushing these other guys. They spent, you know, the 2 months with Dean Ambrose putting him into the main event, and then they went right to Ryback. You know, it's going to get old if they just kind of take all of that momentum and put it right onto Roman Reigns as they possibly put him into the main event at WrestleMania. I don't think that's going to work very well.
Well, you know, this is how they think at that point.
It's a dumb way to think.
What? Newsflash, have you been watching since 2013?
I know. I give them way too much credit, and then they do this.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the bottom line. I think there's a lot of questions in the air with things. And, of course, you know, you have the Brock Lesnar issue with him and the titles and not being around, and this whole idea of holding those titles out to WrestleMania. I mean, they've gone this far. I can't see them turning back now.
The smartest man in professional wrestling is Brock Lesnar, and it's not even close. The guy gets to work very few dates, and when I mean very few, I mean next to nothing. He's the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. He makes the most money out of anybody in the company, and he's pretty much in the main event of WrestleMania. Talk about living the dream.
He's working a UFC schedule in the WWE. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Like, I mean,
he's
how
the best of both worlds here.
No, how many fights has he legitimately had this year? He's had, what, WrestleMania, right?
At Royal Rumble, he wrestled. Well, there wasn't even a wrestling match. He just beat the shit out of Big Show for a little
bit. With a chair for, like, minutes. So, okay, he's had 4 matches in a year. That would be a little stretching it for MMA, but pretty damn close.
And he'll probably wrestle at TLC to close out the year, correct?
No, I don't think he will.
You don't think so?
I don't think we see him until the Rumble.
I think they're doing TLC, to be honest.
I don't think we see him until the Rumble. I think... That is his old standard contract, and the WWE doesn't have the money.
So they go 3 straight pay-per-views without Lesnar?
That's what I think, because the money's not there. Like people can say all they want about what it does for storyline and this, that, and the other thing, but where's the do-re-mi? You just gave away your network for free for a month, so you didn't make any money this month. You know, they're not going, like, they can be as optimistic as they want, but they're not going to hold 300,000 subscribers into December. So, like, they're not going to reach their million number. I just don't see where the money is there to justify bringing back Brock Lesnar other than what he's contractually obligated to do.
I'll give you that, but it kind of smells that his time with the company might end at WrestleMania, if only because they can't afford him anymore.
Oh, it's definitely ending. I mean, Dana White is warming up to the idea of Brock Lesnar coming back. And after what happened in the UFC this week, boy, does Dana White need some kind of good news to pump out to the UFC fans, because, not to get into too deep, but the UFC had this big, giant press conference that they were supposed to have this major announcement. First question, after they announced their schedule for next year, so what was the big announcement? Oh, yeah, we didn't get it done in time.
Ouch.
Yeah, you know, so not only the WWE screws up, people in other companies and professions screw up as well. So,
well, UFC is totally lacking in star power right now, so Dana White would be crazy to not at least consider bringing Brock Lesnar back.
I think WWE negotiates a trade. I think that's what they do.
You're going to say Rousey for Lesnar. You're
damn right I am. Let Ronda Rousey appear at WrestleMania. We won't stand in the way of you getting Brock Lesnar.
Well, does his contract end at WrestleMania?
Like, it does.
They don't have to owe UFC anything. He can just leave on his own accord.
No, but they can say that they won't contest and they won't offer him a contract. So UFC can be free and clear to sign him. Although, that may not even be the case because TNA's old home there at Spike TV, they have the Bellator MMA, and they are starting to spend some big bucks on that. It wouldn't be a total shock if Brock Lesnar ends up in Bellator.
No, I think that's slim to none. You actually think there's a chance?
I think there's a chance because Brock Lesnar is about one thing. How much are you paying me? If Bellator has the right check number on their check there, that's pretty good. And then, get this, what would be their big super fight? Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley.
I don't even know what to say to that. That's their super fight, Lesnar versus Lashley?
It would be. I mean, that would be the biggest draw, right?
It would be, but, I mean, I don't want to get into this UFC stuff, man. That just hurt my feelings hearing that bout Lesnar versus Lashley.
Hey, they had Tito Ortiz versus Stephen Bonner.
Who's going to referee that thing? Earl Hebner?
Maybe. Maybe if he gets fired and they can't afford him with the Destination USA. Or, oh no, America. That's right. This is becoming an ongoing gag throughout the show now.
It is.
Yeah, so I don't know. But yeah, so that's a possibility. And the other question would be, if Brock goes, what does that mean for Paul Heyman?
Yeah, WWE might not have a use for him at that point if Lesnar goes, unless they start doing that whole thing where they pair him up with a young star and that just ultimately fizzles out, you know? Put him with Cesaro again, see if that lightning can strike twice.
Yeah, lightning in a bottle. Yeah. I don't know. Did you catch that very weird ECW thing they did with him and Joey Styles?
I did not. I can't watch any more ECW nonsense. I've seen every documentary and every special known to man. They're not going to tell me anything I don't already know.
It was rather strange, considering that Joey Styles is an employee of this company. I found it a little bizarre.
What, was there something that specific that you noticed? Or
no,
what?
Just little jabs that they were taking at the WWE that were kind of didn't seem scripted and. And there were little jabs taken at them as well, it seemed, within this whole show, and it was very bizarre. And then it spilled into a online fight between Tommy Dreamer and Paul Heyman online. So
another guy I could care less about, Tommy Dreamer.
So won't be reporting on House of Hardcore here on the podcast.
Nope.
They had a big show though. Apparently, lots of people showed up. But
Del Rio was there, yeah.
Yeah, Del Rio was there, and the crowd apparently went ape poop.
Ape poop for Del Rio.
Yeah.
And Ricardo was there with him, too.
He was, because Ricardo just doesn't have a career without Alberto, let's face it.
Let's be honest, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, anyway, that's what's going on with that. Also got to see the Randy Savage documentary. I don't know if you've got your hands on that thing yet.
I heard good things. They showed 20 minutes or so on the network, right?
I saw the preview, but I also saw the full thing.
Oh, you did? Where did you see that?
I have connections. Oh, and it's the Macho Man Randy Savage. Of course I'm getting my hands on this thing. but you know what? In all honesty, it for all the build-up and all the hype, you're still left with the same questions at the end. It's never really clearly defined why Randy has been out of the company and out of their good graces for that whole time period. Obviously, no McMahons, no Triple H in this. All the mysteries are still there. And when they started promoting this documentary, they kind of said that it would answer all the questions, and I don't think it did.
Well, I'd have to see it for myself before I could chime in on that.
No, I'm just saying, like that was my impressions of it. Like if you have different impressions and you see it down the line, feel free to chime in on the podcast. But as a Randy Savage fan, it was good. Like it was a good documentary. There's a lot of stuff I could could have done without. I could have done without Lanny Poffo. I could have done without Hulk Hogan, because both of them lie, and I just get sick and tired of listening to them lie.
Do they have new interviews with those two? Or?
Oh yeah, and that's the thing. Savage is going in the Hall of Fame. I think if it doesn't happen after this, I'll be shocked, because the fact, not only was Lanny Poffo in this, Randy Savage's mother, who, God bless her, I mean, this woman, I think she's in her late 80s or whatever, and she's just the sweetest little thing. I mean, I just felt so sorry for this woman having to even bother with these people doing this video. Like, I mean, Lanny should have the common sense to not have his mother, you know, doing these interviews and stuff like that, but that's another thing for another day. And I don't know, it was good. There was a couple little nuggets that I found interesting. Randy Savage, as most people know, played minor league baseball for a time with St. Louis and Cincinnati and a number of organizations. He bounced around. And a couple cool stories about that. When he was down in Florida, he actually wasn't allowed to wrestle because of his baseball contract, but he wrestled under a mask in Florida, which was one thing I didn't know. And a second story that I did not know, Dusty Rhodes used to wrestle, of course, down in Florida. And every time he would come up for these matches, he would see like four guys in like the ninth or tenth row in these Cincinnati Reds baseball uniforms. He later learned to come to realize that was Randy Savage and his teammates who rushed from after the game to come watch the wrestling in their baseball uniforms, which I thought was just a cool, cute little story and something I could totally see Randy Savage doing.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. I'll give it that, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it does have your little nuggets in it, but if you're looking for this to be the be-all, end-all answer to all questions and urban legends, it isn't that.
Yeah, I didn't think WWE would start giving away some of those, you know, really deep, dark secrets for Savage. Maybe they'll come out in an eventual Hall of Fame speech by one of his family members.
I doubt it, although if it did, I would be shocked.
You never know. When you have a live mic like that in front of the entire wrestling world, or at least the important people anyway, you might just go for it.
It will be, let's put it this way, when and if this happens, and I say if because I never trust the WWE to get this done.
Yeah.
But if it happens, it'll be interesting to see the looks on three people's faces who will be pretty much easy to find in the front row. Vince McMahon, although Vince you don't sometimes see, but Stephanie and Triple H as well.
Yeah, and Hogan maybe.
Hogan lies. Hogan says everything was hunky-dory and him and Savage were friends and no one can refute him because Randy's not around, so that's Hogan.
His truth is all that matters to him.
In fact, here we will end on this wonderful Hulk Hogan story from the DVD. So spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the DVD and you don't want to hear this, we bid you adieu. Come back next week. We miss you. And
you're kicking them out. We haven't even done Survivor Series yet.
Oh, right. We got to do Survivor Series. Okay. Go away for 5 minutes. Come back. Sorry about that. I forgot about Survivor Series. That's how good Survivor Series is going to be.
You literally forgot.
I did.
It was a major pay-per-view in 2 days.
I did. Totally slipped my mind. We got talking about Randy Savage, so I'm totally enthralled. Just like last week when I raged about the women's PWI 50 list. If you didn't hear last week, go back and listen to that.
Don't get James started on that again.
Anyway, Hulk Hogan. Because Hulk Hogan loves to tell the truth and say stupid things. In this video, one of the last clips we hear from the Hulkster. Apparently, a month later, him and Randy Savage apparently shared a doctor. And this doctor revealed to Hulk Hogan, breaking, you know, client privilege and all of this, that he wanted to give Randy Savage a heart exam, and Randy didn't want to do the test because he was worried about the health of his mother and didn't have time for it and blah, blah, blah. And if he had given those tests to Randy Savage would be alive today, according to the Hulkster.
Oh, wow. You buying into that?
No, I don't buy any of it. This is the same man who said he was going to be in Metallica.
Hogan said that?
He did. He said he was offered to be a bassist in Metallica, which Metallica shot down. We don't want to get into Hogan lies, or we'd never get to Survivor Series. It would be next year's Survivor Series.
That's another show entirely. Just an hour devoted to
Hogan lies, myths, and rumors. Tune in on Condo on the Moon. There's the Hulkster. You know, Randy could have been alive. And, of course, he had nothing to do with the divorce of Elizabeth and Randy Savage. He is clear, white as a lily, Hulk Hogan, never does anything wrong. Drink your milk, do your steroids, all that stuff. Let's go on to Survivor Series, where Hulk Hogan made a buck or two over the years with his Hulkamaniacs every year. This is, without a doubt, and it's on my birthday, Chris Walder, which I think makes it even more depressing.
Happy early birthday if I don't get a chance. This is the last podcast before your birthday, so happy birthday, James.
There you go. And the WWE has wowed me with the entertainment they're going to provide. We talked about this a little last week. The new and improved Fandango.
Is it new and improved?
That's how they said it. Exactly that.
He's now with Rosa Mendez. I don't think that's new and improved at all.
Clearly he's going to keep losing then, right?
Would they have him lose in his first match back? That wouldn't shock me.
Well, no, but Rosa Mendez never wins, right? That's the running gag on the internet.
Well, she'll be ringside. We don't know who Fandango's facing yet.
No, but I heard... Here was an interesting theory I heard on the interweb, which I found very funny.
What?
What if Fandango was the bunny?
If Fandango was the bunny?
Yep.
Oh. You know what? No, I really do think they're setting it up to be Darren Young, but that would be kind of cool. If it was Fandango, it would be really out of left field.
Well, we haven't booked the obvious match between Adam Rose and the bunny.
Which doesn't look like it's happening at Survivor Series.
Oh, it's happening.
Thank God.
No, it's happening. Trust me. They don't have enough here for that match not to happen.
Oh my goodness.
The bunny and Adam Rose will lock horns. Will it be Fandango? That is the only question that remains.
I hope that's true now. Now that you've just thrown it out there, I really hope that Fandango is the bloody bunny.
Well, it's not my theory. It's someone else's, but I just...
Well, we'll just give it to you for the sake of this argument.
I found it amusing, so there it is. Fandango versus a mystery opponent. Oh, by the way, Wade Barrett also expected to be on the panel. That'll be interesting because Wade Barrett should be pretty close to being healthy.
He's revealing when he's coming back on the show.
Oh, is he? Is that the gimmick?
Yeah, he's going to say when he's coming back, and by all accounts, he'll probably say that he's in the Royal Rumble. Either that or he's going to return at TLC, because he should be coming back relatively soon.
Yeah, he was supposed to be back in December. Royal Rumble would be a long way away for him.
Well, it's another month.
Yeah, that would not be good news for bad news.
Oh, here we go.
There you go. Anyway, that's pre-show. Then, of course, we have our lovely Divas match that has had absolutely, positively zero build to it. I am not talking about the Nikki Bella AJ title match. No, no, there is more Divas action for my birthday because it is my birthday, Chris Walder, and Lord knows I love the Total Divas. WWE has clearly been spying on my viewing habits. We got Paige on the good girl team. Or no, the bad girl team.
Bad girl team.
That's right, she's the bad girl now. And Natalia, who I think of as a bad girl, and that's probably why I screwed up. She is leading Team Good Girl. I don't care.
Do you remember who's on whose team?
No. I mean, Cameron's a heel.
Yes.
And apparently so is Summer Rae, which is news to me.
She's a heel.
Well, no, not really. Not like on Total Divas she is, but not really in WWE. The last time we saw Summer Rae, she was tormenting Fandango with Layla.
No, she's done some stuff since then.
What has she done?
She did the thing with Tyson Kidd and Natalia on Raw, remember? When she was...
That was just implied. We never saw it.
No, it was implied to the extent that we thought that Summer Rae was doing something with Kidd, but that would make her a bad girl.
I don't know. Anyway, so she's on the team, and then isn't
so
Layla
three,
the
yeah.
fourth one?
Yeah, that's four right there.
Now, the good girl team I might have some trouble with. We got Natalia, Naomi,
my girl.
Oh, Alicia Fox?
Yeah.
When did she become a face?
When Paige turned on her.
Oh, okay. And then Emma? Is that right?
Yep.
Wow, I named all the divas in that match. And with that, I still don't care.
Well, who's your, you got to pick somebody for the sake of this
Team Paige, obviously.
Team, yeah, all right.
I mean, Paige will be your sole survivor or a combination of her. Just if Cameron survives, that's it. I'm done.
She'll justify her PWI ranking if she survives on Sunday.
If she is not the first one eliminated, I'm done. Like, she needs to be pinned, like, right away.
Well, we got two for Team Paige here. Sorry, Natty. No Canada love today.
I never have loved Natty. It has nothing to do with Canada. But I am I am all for Tyson Kidd and his Beats headphones. And kudos to him for what some are calling a match of the year with him, Dolph Ziggler, and Cesaro.
Certainly one of the better televised ones, anyway.
Yeah, on SmackDown, so it was buried. No one saw it, but it was out there. So go find it. And of course, that match is not on this card. Because why would you put a good match like that on a card? That would be silly. What else do we have? Oh, our four-way tag team match with Los Jobbadors. They have made it to a pay-per-view.
We did it.
Woohoo! And they are in there with your boys, the Usos, the team of Miz Dow and The Miz, and, of course, the Brothers Dust, who are your reigning and defending tag team champions, in case you forgot.
So who we got here? I'm going with Stardust and Goldust. I think the favorite or the consensus right now is that it should go to Miz and Miz Dow, if only because they're like the hottest thing, you know, going in the mid card. But they do continue to tease tension between the two. I don't think the tag team titles would be good for them, especially if they are going to go to Splitsville soon. Just keep it on Gold and Stardust and just continue the dissension and, you know, Miz Dow becoming a face or whatnot. And the Usos don't need the belts, and Los Matadores are just there for the sake of being there. So
you're not even considering them?
I'm not. Los Matadores?
They're not even considered.
Oh my God! They're not even in the ballpark. They're not even close. We're reading different books. They're on a different page. They're gone. They're long gone.
So you can't picture El Torito coming out with the two belts on him as he charges through the capes.
It would take him half an hour to get down to the ring with two championship belts. He'd be struggling so bad.
Wow, so you're saying he can't... Wow, you're picking on the little guy. That's not nice.
What? Both belts? Those things are heavy. You ever carried a championship belt?
I think he could do it.
They're like 90 pounds each.
I'm almost
90 pounds.
I'm almost tempted to say them now just to see that happen. But
we put a thought into Vince McMahon's head. Oh my God, that's going to be hilarious.
That would be great. That would be great. Could you imagine him falling down the ramp and rolling with the belts? That's good television. But in all seriousness, I like all your logic when it comes to Miz and Miz Dow, but the WWE has this weird obsession with thinking the Miz is relevant, and the fans love Miz Dow, so this is one of those rare occasions where the WWE can both please themselves and please the fans, so I think they'll actually take it and they'll put the belts on Miz and Miz Dow.
Okay.
For a very short title run. I don't think it will last long.
Very short.
Yeah, I think one will screw over the other at some point, and that will be the end of them. But it'd be all right. I mean, they've kept the tag team titles, well, strong isn't the right word for it, because I think a lot of times they're an afterthought, but they at least haven't flipped them around as much as they have some other belts. So there is some credibility in them. Somewhere in there, there's credibility in those belts. Not much, but a little.
Fair enough.
Okay, so on from there, we go to, we got our Divas title match. We might as well go there. AJ Lee, rumored to be on the way out, leaving, gone, off to join CM Punk to join the circus and write comics and all the rest of it. And Nikki Bella with her slave sister in her corner. Brie Bell, I would assume. I don't know. I want to pick AJ because I don't want AJ to be gone, because you know what that means if AJ's gone.
Nikki versus Brie for the Divas Championship.
Well, not only that, my dream match.
Oh, yeah, you and damn Stephanie. Oh, God.
Dead, damn it! And on my birthday! We can't have that! So, damn it, AJ's winning.
Yeah, I got AJ, too. She's being advertised for tables, ladders, and chairs. If she does leave, it's going to be at the very end of the year.
Maybe,
AJ wins.
Maybe, just like her husband, she will go to the Royal Rumble, get eliminated by Kane, and never be seen again.
Oh my God, they're going to tease AJ versus Kane, and she's just going to be like, screw this, I'm gone.
No, you know what she'll do? Actually, there is a Divas reference for this. I believe it was Gail Kim. If I got that, Walder's just cracking up already. I've got to tell the story,
okay,
Walder.
Go for it.
So once upon a time, Gail Kim was on the outs with the WWE, and she was in the Divas Battle Royal, and you know what? She just had enough and decided to leave, and eliminated herself and walked out, and ended up on TNA. So there you go.
Good times. Maybe
AJ will do that at the Royal Rumble.
Just throw herself out.
In a Divas Rumble. We've never had a Divas Rumble.
Oh, there's many reasons why that's been the case.
Maybe this year, Walder. Maybe this year.
They've tried that before, and they've only allowed the girls. If you even leave the ring, you're eliminated. Like, you can just dive through the middle rope, and you're gone.
A Divas Royal Rumble. The winner gets a shot at the Divas Champion.
I wouldn't trust Cameron to throw herself over the top rope. Like, I don't know if she'd be able to make it over athletically. So, they're just like, screw it. If she leaves the ring, she's gone.
Alrighty. Yeah, Cameron needs to play that new WWE game and get yelled at by Bill DeMont.
This is the shortest card ever. Like, there's like no matches on this thing.
That's why I say, if you think we're not getting Adam Rose and the Bunny, you're not. Like, Adam Rose and the Bunny is happening.
Well, the main event could get like an hour and a half at this point.
Are you kidding?
They could go an hour. We've seen Survivor Series matches go an hour.
Are you kidding? Oh, God, no.
Team Authority versus Team Cena, you don't think that could go an hour?
If we have 20 run-ins at the end of it, maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, Randy Orton is definitely going to show up, probably,
well,
maybe.
We at least have one singles match that is somewhat relevant, but...
That's right. We got one more match before we get to that.
Is it... There's another match?
Yes, there is. You have forgotten about the feud that was launched at the end of the last pay-per-view.
No, that's what I'm talking about. There's only one more singles match before we get to the main event.
Yes.
That's the Ambrose versus Bray Wyatt.
Indeed. And
which I don't care about at all.
Wow. Well, all right then.
You have to admit, too, that the build to this is just...
No,
sucked.
It's been terrible. I will admit, though, a little bit of rehab this week. A little bit. Bray Wyatt, we've talked about this before. Bray Wyatt needs a shot clock or something on his promos because I like them, but they go too long. Like he's got to get to the point a little faster. He can't ramble as much as he does. And I kind of like the fact that Dean Ambrose kind of threw him under the bus a little bit for that in his response promo.
Yeah.
I kind of like that a little bit. And I like that Dean is taking those, and people are going to get mad that I say it, but those CM Punk like little shots, I kind of like when Dean does that. I think that's pretty cool. And this match, Dean Ambrose has to win. I mean Bray Wyatt. I'm sorry, I don't know what his future is. I really don't. I think he's in a dangerous place right now. And I think Dean Ambrose wins this match. And if he doesn't, it's a mistake.
He's in a dangerous place. It's not all a shot at him. Like, I think it's a combination of his character plus creative just not having anything for him. And I think that's because he's such a unique persona that there's only a handful of guys that you could put with him and it would work really well, but you're running out of those guys. And, you know, Ambrose might have been the last straw. I don't think Ambrose wins at Survivor Series, to be honest. I think either Wyatt wins or this ends in a double countout or a double disqualification, because I think you can at least get another couple of months out of this. You can maybe even go through TLC, maybe finish it at the Royal Rumble. But I think WWE is aware that this build and the promos that they've had and the very little physical interaction, this isn't maybe the way they've wanted to go about things, but it's the way that it's turned out. So there's still a lot of other stuff that they can do with it, but Survivor Series isn't going to be the end-all, be-all. there's even, I would even give it a possibility that maybe we see two new guys debut for Wyatt. I'm not saying it's going to be the Ascension, and we you know, Harper and Rowan are doing their own thing now, but I think Wyatt needs some sort of family or faction behind him, and that could unveil itself at Survivor Series.
I don't know. I'm just, Bray's had too many programs with too many good competitors that I'm starting to, I don't know if I believe anymore. I don't know if I'm going to hold my cell phone up for the cool entrance anymore.
Maybe a new day will be with Bray Wyatt.
That will, hey, yeah, will those guys show up at this? I mean, there's time.
That would shock the hell out of me. It would be absolutely hilarious.
I'm not saying in this match, but will they make some kind of appearance on this show?
I think they will. I really do. You can sign, seal, and deliver that. Walter said it. So a new day will be at Survivor Series.
So the new day will actually be my birthday.
There you go.
Wow, that'll be exciting. Anyway, we move on to our main event that we already kind of discussed this at length a little bit.
Yeah.
With what seems like a very predictable outcome, but a lot of... There's a lot. The one thing about these Survivor Series matches, the traditional Survivor Series matches, when they're booked correctly, they're usually designed to come up with a lot of spin-off feuds coming out of them. And with that said, I think the obvious one, you can take the two former Wyatt family members. They're going to get paired off.
Right.
That seems obvious. Luke Harper's now the Intercontinental Champion. Give him a pretty soft, easy program to start his IC title reign. Seems like a plan to me. It gets interesting from there, though. The common belief heading into this match, before Ryback became part of it, was this is how we get your Cena versus Rusev feud cooking. It still could go that way, but again, if miracle of miracles happens, and John Cena takes my birthday as the day to turn his character after many, many years of frustrating fans, then probably it's him and Ryback.
No chance of that. Cena's not turning heel at Survivor Series. They're not even going to tease a little bit of a character change in him. I wish it for your birthday. I really do, but it's not going to happen. I actually see more of a chance of John Cena eliminating Rusev cleanly than him turning heel. So.
Then why do the program? Why?
You just do it because, I mean, even if Rusev loses, you think his character is just completely shot?
Yes!
I think he's
dead! They went all this time to protect him from not being pinned. They've taken a lot of time and care to make sure this has happened. And then you're just going to have John Cena pin him in a Survivor Series match?
Maybe even Ryback. You think they would give him that shot in the arm by having him go over Rusev?
Not in this match. I mean, if Rusev's going to lose, he's going to lose in a program, not in some stupid Survivor Series match.
I could see that as a WrestleMania feud, too. You know, Rusev versus Ryback for the United States Championship.
Why not? I mean...
Why the hell not?
Why not? I'm game. Throw them together. Let's see what happens. Bill Goldberg isn't coming back to fight him. We know that.
That's true.
Yeah, so although the WWE, you never know. They're getting desperate. We may see Bill.
Are we going to go and just say Team Cena wins, if only because they're not firing that entire team?
That would make sense. And obviously, with the authority... That doesn't mean they're fired. It just means they're not in charge. So,
who goes in charge? Who gets the mantle now? Who's in charge of the show if they do lose on Sunday? Do we see Vince back on a regular basis?
Everyone said the obvious thing would be Vince, but I think it's going to be someone who's going to be a lackey of Vince, whoever that ends up being. I have no idea.
Is John Laurinaitis still around? People power.
Yeah, you could do him or whoever. Like, or maybe somebody new that we haven't seen in a while, but I don't think Vince wants to be out on TV anymore, and you know, all the speculation is this is the old angle that they wanted to do. Was it last year or a couple years ago where Vince feuds with Stephanie and Hunter for control of the company?
Which will probably happen at WrestleMania. That'll probably be one of the main event matches. Yeah.
And some people are jumping the shark and saying that'll be Triple H versus The Rock.
Which would make the most sense. But I don't think Rock is going to be at WrestleMania.
So Rock would not help Vince save his company?
No, just Vince, apparently The Rock has a lot of movie productions that are going over the course of WrestleMania, so I don't know how he would have time for it.
But wait a second, this is The Rock's home, Chris Walder. He's never going to leave us, don't you remember that?
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I'm just trying to think logically here. If he's doing movies, which are way more important than his wrestling career, I mean, I don't know why The Rock would come back for a match with Triple H. At least John Cena made sense. He's wrestled Triple H a million times. I don't think that would be enough to, even if they paid him the world and a half, I don't think that's enough.
But yeah, that Survivor Series, I can't say that it's all that compelling. I can't say that, you know, anything jumps off the page. Obviously, I think everything gets turned upside down if you had some kind of turn with Cena, but I just don't see that happening.
Thank you.
And I don't see them giving it away for free.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if they did, I mean, I give up on this company. Because that's money. Like I mean, if they're ever going to do it, that is a money-making pay-per-view.
But you can never... You can't advertise a Cena heel turn, you know what I mean? It could happen literally any time, but you're not going to... It might get you some rebuys, you know, if you order it on pay-per-view, if you don't have the network, but you're not going to say, this Sunday at TLC, John Cena becomes a bad guy.
that's kind of... We talked about TNA earlier. I could see TNA doing that.
They have done that in the past. Remember when they did Dixie Carter going through a table? Yeah.
We're telling you right now. John Cena turning heel at WrestleMania 31. Buy your tickets.
He kicks Dolph Ziggler in the balls.
Oh, my.
This is what we've become.
I don't know. It's just... Monday just... It was that whole thing. Like, the whole thing goes back to Monday Night Raw. How on earth can any babyface justify being friends with John Cena?
Yeah.
That's the lesson of this podcast, other than our nice conversation with Jay Lethal, which we thank Jay Lethal and the folks at Ring of Honor for hooking us up with Jay. But the lesson of this podcast, other than the great stuff we had with Jay, don't be John Cena's friend. It's not good for you.
He don't like you.
It's not he doesn't like you. He doesn't even care about you.
You're not Nikki Bella.
He doesn't even care. And Nikki Bella isn't even really his friend. Let's face it. I mean, Nikki Bella isn't getting him to marry her. That's not happening.
Yeah, she's not doing a good job.
No, she can't even, like, she can't even close the deal with John Cena. What does any of these silly baby faces think that they're going to be able to close the deal when Nikki Bella can't?
Good point as always, James.
Hey, it is what it is. But the thing I will give WWE credit for, these baby faces are stupid, yes, but they have positioned ones that aren't. Roman Reigns, not buying into John Cena's junk. Dean Ambrose, didn't buy into it. And I think that's the new test of how you know what the WWE thinks of somebody. If they are a John Cena friend, that's not good for your career.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better. More questions.
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye.